ideology.
Tenure.
Coffee.
Light bulb.
Critique. Methods.
Dysentery. Lavish.
Corduroy. Research.
You are listening to.
You're listening to.
Prof Talk.
On CITR.
Thank you very much.
Good morning and welcome to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Karen Moxley. Today on the show, we'll be hearing an interview with Professor Joe Cutbirth from the UBC Graduate School of Journalism. Joe Cutbirth started as a cub reporter in Texas. Politics pulled him in early. He racked up awards for his work from the Texas Women's Political Caucus, the Texas Associated Press, and the Dallas Star. Joe got his start with a bachelor's degree from the University of Texas in Austin. He went on to do a master's in philosophy at Georgetown and is now completing his PhD at Columbia University in New York. His dissertation examines the role John Stewart played in the 2004 U.S. presidential election. These days, Joe Cutbirth writes regularly for the Huffington Post, and of course on his own blog, The Blind Hog. His teaching has taken him from the New School in New York City to NYU. Most recently, he taught at the Columbia School of Journalism. Professor Cutbirth has just moved to Vancouver to join UBC's graduate journalism program. Joining us now is Jess Micklin, a journalism student here at UBC. She conducted the interview that we're about to hear with Professor Cutbirth. Hello, Jess.
Hi, Karen.
So you are a student, and you are taught by Joe.
Yeah, I am. He's actually one of our four main profs that lead the integrated journalism course at the school.
And what's he like in the classroom?
He's just a really, really passionate professor. He has a total grassroots way of reporting, and he's exactly what comes to mind when I think of a traditional journalist. He's the quintessential reporter.
Now, Joe's from Texas, so I'm just assuming he must have some great stories.
Oh, he certainly does. He tells us stories about back when he got his start running down courthouse halls, you know, trying to catch an interview, and he's really inspiring.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing this interview. Here it is. This is Jess Micklin interviewing Professor Joe Cutbirth.
Welcome to Prof Talk.
I'm glad to be here.
You're new to Vancouver. How does the academic environment at UBC differ from other schools you've been at?
Well, I think academic environments in universities often reflect the community in which they exist. And life in Vancouver is very different than life in Manhattan. I've found people here a little more what we would call laid back. I've found people here to be a little less angst-ridden. And I think that's reflected in the school and in the students and the faculty.
Now, before making the transition to teaching journalism, you practiced it.
Right.
How did you get your start in the field?
You know what? I was kind of floundering around in my early 20s and didn't really know what it was I wanted to do. And I went off and skied for a year, which sounds much more glamorous than it really was, and came back and just announced that I wanted to be a writer. And my parents kind of rolled their eyes, and I started taking some courses at a local state university, got an internship at the local paper, and worked there for about, worked straight on in newspapers for about 14 years after that.
And what were you covering?
My version of graduate school was 4.5 years at the Wichita Falls, Texas Times Record News, and I covered all of the traditional beats. I covered, started with the police cops beat, moved to school board, covered city hall, and later covered the courthouse.
And where was this?
Wichita Falls, Texas. It's a town of about 100,000 people on northwest of Dallas. All of my reporting was done in the state of Texas.
Okay.
Newspapers are located in Texas, yeah.
So after nearly 20 years in the business, why did you decide to pursue an academic career?
Yeah, I gave up the one job, the only job in my whole life that I've ever really wanted so bad I thought I would die if I didn't get it, was I wanted to be a political writer at the state capitol in Austin, Texas. And I was very blessed I got to do that. I got to work in the press corps down there and cover some really famous, well-known American politicians that came from Texas. And there was a specific election that involved a really well-known governor and a challenger you may have heard of, George W. Bush. And so I worked for the incumbent governor, so don't blame me for George Bush. But we lost that campaign.
That's a big burden.
That was the beginning of his career. And so I lost that, and after that I started taking stock of what I wanted to do in my life, and I decided I wanted some more education. So I went to graduate school, and it was in graduate school that I really got some opportunities to teach, and that's just kind of how it all went, came down.
Now, you had an opportunity to work with the noted sociologist Herb Gans.
Yes, yes. I took his course in sociological research methods during my doctoral work at Columbia University in New York.
And what did he teach you about how to observe people?
Herb Gans, Professor Gans, was just an amazing experience in my life, and we still are good friends, and I always I've had an opportunity to know some really amazing people, and he's sure one of them. Gans taught me that sociologists study systems and structures, whereas journalists study individuals and anecdotes. And whereas journalism is driven by characters, sociology is driven by structure and systems in society. And so how I got my start doing my own doctoral work was I had an opportunity for a year to work with him, and he said, just find a group of people in Manhattan, and I will tell you how to study them the way a sociologist does, one-on-one. So I spent a year with Gans, and I picked stand-up comedians. So I spent a year, this is what people make fun of PhDs for, I spent a year going twice a week to a specific comedy club in Greenwich Village and doing a study of humor and kind of how our society and how the narrative of what's going on at that time, the year was 2004, was reflected in the narrative of these stand-up comedians.
You have a funny story about when you took Gans' class and you came back the second day.
Well,
can you tell us about that?
That is true. You know, he is so well known and so iconic to me that I really was excited to take his course. And the first day, there were about 15 or 16 students that showed up, and he passed out this syllabus, and you had to be a third year PhD candidate, and you could only be taking one other course. Those were the requirements. And he passed out the syllabus with all the requirements, and we came back the next day, and of 16, only two showed up. 14 dropped the class. So it was me and another student from what's called Teachers College, which is a subsidiary of Columbia. And Gans was like, you know, what? I'll help you get another course, or what else do you want to study? Or he just figured the class was closed. And I said, would you give us an independent study and just let us study one-on-one with you? And he was really like, I think that was the beginning of our friendship. He kind of lit up and said, sure, I'd love that. And like I said, he said, pick a culture of people in Manhattan and I'll teach you how to study them.
So is that where the idea to look at satire came from?
It evolved from stand-up comedy, because a lot of stand-up comedy is satirical. Stand-up comedians are just notorious cynics. And that's a lot of their comedy comes from anger, and a lot of satire comes from anger. And so, yes, this was the beginning of my interest in the idea that people learn about society and learn about our culture in ways other than traditional journalism. And so I had had my experience as a journalist, and I was always wondering about how people who don't read the newspaper or watch the TV news know what's going on. And this was kind of a place I started saying, this was about the time the studies started coming out showing people were getting political information from people on late night TV.
Now, were you seeing people getting any of this information in the clubs too? Was that like something that comedians addressed?
My initial study was just what's being said there.
Okay.
I wanted to know what the narrative that was being produced by this group of people was about. And I wanted to see it organically. I didn't want to ask them. I just wanted to hang out. And so what I did was a sociological method called ethnography. It's kind of like when Jane Goodall went and sat with the apes. That's what archaeologists and sociologists do. They just find a group of people, find where this thing is playing out, and they go hang out there and observe and write down everything they see. So I spent, like I said, a year going about twice a week to the Comedy Cellar, was the club in New York. And it's known for kind of some edgy political type humor. A lot of Saturday Night Live people go down there to just work out their stuff. And so that was where I started getting this idea that there is a narrative in satire and stand-up comedy that mirrors the narrative that we see in traditional journalism.
Okay. Were there any stand-up performances?
Did I do any?
No, did you? Do you remember any?
Oh, well, I don't know if Colin Quinn, who was a famous guy on Saturday Night Live, he did the Weekend Update for a while. Mm-hmm. Daryl Hammond used to come down there a lot. Ray Romano came down there once when I was down there. Seinfeld was always rumored to about to show up any time, but he never actually did. There are some that went on to see. I would see some on TV every so often. There was a guy named Jim Norton who I've seen on TV a bunch. That stand-up, that whole life of those stand-up comedians is very interesting because they kind of do a circuit and they know each other and they show up in shows. They'll be playing in St. Louis in 3 weeks and somebody else will be there. And so they all kind of hang out and know each other and getting to watch them. I made some friends, not anybody that I keep up with regularly. The closest one I got to know was Colin Quinn. And my original doctoral dissertation was going to be on Colin's show because at the time I was already ready to dismiss Jon Stewart as too mainstream. I kind of felt like Stewart had made a flash in the pan. I was looking for something a little more avant-garde. So I spent about 6 months hanging out at Colin's show, which was the precursor to the Colbert Report. It was for a while in 2005. It was The Daily Show and then a show called Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. So I was going to do my doctoral dissertation on Tough Crowd, and after studying it for 6 months, it closed. So it was like all this
limited research.
Yeah, so it was like, shoot. And so that's when I said, well, you know what, I'll go study Jon Stewart. So I ended up studying Jon Stewart kind of as a second choice.
Your studies of Jon Stewart, your research that you've done, is the basis for a course that you will be teaching come January to your journalism students called Satire as News.
Right.
What will you guys be studying?
Well, you know, it's the idea of satire as news. Satire is a long, there's a long tradition in Western society that really goes back to like the Roman Empire of satire, and it's a literary genre that has always had a lot of strong political overtones, and it's really emerged again in the last 10 years as something that people are beginning to pay a lot of attention to. So one thing we're not going to do is we're not going to show up for 14 weeks in a row and laugh about what was on TV last night and say why we thought it was funny. Because people can do that over beer at somebody's house. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to them about how humor works, some of the history behind humor. They're going to read Freud. They're going to read the major communication scholars. We're going to look at things like stereotyping, semiotics. We're going to look at it's really a communications course designed to kind of help people understand a specific type of narrative that's relevant in our lives today. And that people, and frankly, have some fun along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think this course should be taught at a graduate level?
I think it's taught at a graduate level because it gives us the opportunity, I'm going to throw around some graduate school words here, it gives us the opportunity to do research and for graduate students to learn the literature of the discipline. So there'll be significant academic readings. They'll be reading Sigmund Freud. They'll be reading Walter Lippmann. They'll be reading some Herb Gans. They'll be reading my mentor, James Carey, about communication and about the way things work. And so I think journalists oftentimes are so focused on the practice of journalism that sometimes they don't think through things like the possibility that stereotypes are not just a problem for the viewers, but also sometimes journalists use stereotypes in their reporting, and it affects their actual epistemology. Reporters need to know how to be communicators on the supply side as well as citizens on the demand side. So I think this broadens their ability to be good communicators.
You're listening to an interview with Professor Joe Cutberth. We'll be right back.
This boy and girl coming home from school look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date, dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
Bernoulli's Bagels, serving up authentic Montreal-style bagels made fresh daily on the premises, in addition to sandwiches, soups, squealers, calzones, and freshly squeezed juice. Bernoulli's is located on the main concourse of the sub and open Monday through Saturday. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
Welcome back to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today on the show, we're talking to Professor Joe Cutberth from the UBC Graduate School of Journalism.
How do you plan to Canadianize the curriculum?
We've already done that. We'll see. There's a significant part of Rick Mercer in that curriculum that's added that I didn't teach in New York, and that's good. It's going to be more international in scope. When I taught it at American universities, we did focus more specifically on Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, and Saturday Night Live. But I've added, we're going to study Sacha Baron Cohen. I put him in there. So there's going to be some stuff for Ali G, who did a great, his stuff was brilliant until it was unmasked. And there's a whole sociological reading around celebrity and how he was able to play at the level he was with people like Boutros-Ghali and James Baker and Noam Chomsky and get these people to fall for this idea that somebody was going to interview them. But we're going to look at some of the things in society around journalism with Ali G, with Rick Mercer, as well as Jon Stewart and Colbert.
I believe Ali G called him Boutros-Ghali.
It's hilarious.
So
yes,
funny.
Correct.
So you've said in the past that just because something is funny doesn't mean it isn't serious.
That's great.
What did you mean by that?
The things that they talk about in those clubs oftentimes are not funny. War. The year I studied the Comedy Cellar with Gans, that was the year America invaded Iraq. And, you know, war is not funny. It's devastating. It is the worst thing that humans have done on this planet to each other for millennia. And yet there are people down there making jokes about war. And there are people down there making jokes about other people's cultures and beliefs and values, which I find really disturbing. But it's the place that it's done allows this narrative to emerge that really tells us about ourselves. So as we're laughing at ourselves, we're also getting a sense of who we are as a people. And I think that's very serious.
Okay. So do you feel that there's a risk of the humor overtaking the academic content in your course?
I really, really make sure that doesn't happen. And, here's the reason I'm excited about teaching this course here this time is I've not taught it at a graduate level. I've taught it as an undergraduate level. And when I've taught it at undergraduates, I've taught it as a lecture, where I kind of would go in and give them the big picture and the history and put together clips and do a little PowerPoint show and try to be a big impresario and make them laugh. Because frankly, 19-year-olds who aren't really sure what they want to do and they don't want to get a job because their parents have sent them to college sometimes are not geared up for the type of intellectual work that this text has to offer. So I'm going to teach this as a seminar, and it's going to be more student-driven. In fact, the students are really going to run the course. They just don't know it yet. And that will produce some new knowledge about this, and that's what a person with my academic credential learns to do at a school like Columbia. So there's one way to do it, which is to go in and try to put on a show for 3 hours every week. But I'm going to be honest with you. After about 3 weeks of that, everybody's boring. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And everybody's like, why am I in this class? I can watch this on my own. But if the students engage it, and if they truly are leading a student-driven discussion about the literature of communication, and that coupled with a text each week, and then they'll do some actual social science research toward the end, and then we're going to craft a website to put our research that's unique to young people at this university up and talk about how this is playing out here. That's real academic work. That's the kind of work that's done at an international level research university, and that's what we're going to try to do here.
Great. So I know you've been working on a book called Fake News, Real Politics.
Well, yes, that would be the book version of my doctoral dissertation. So all dissertations, at least at reputable universities, tend to turn into books. And that's the point of a dissertation. Sometimes it doesn't turn directly into one, but sometimes the research that you do for the dissertation leads to one. And so that would be the book driven out of the research that I did for my doctoral dissertation.
So how are you doing with that book?
It's coming along nicely.
Good.
It's coming along nicely. And, the good news is my department chairman here is very vested. She asks me about once a week what progress I've made on it. And she's very interested, and she'd like to see it too. And that's some really good, encouragement.
Good. At the end of the day, you're a journalist.
Okay.
What kind of future do you see for journalism?
I think there's a wonderful future in journalism. I think the future of journalism has never been more exciting or this bright, save maybe the 1830s, which was the era of the eruption of the penny press. But I think too often discussion about the future of journalism tends to be stereotypically, and I use that word in like Walter Lippmann's sense, it tends to be reduced simplicitly to the discussion of print newspapers. And I think print newspapers are last year's calendar. I think they're almost irrelevant. I know that my friends who work in that industry hate hearing that, but I think the truth is, I would love people to come back 3 years from now and tell me I was wrong. I do not think print newspapers will really exist in Western culture as we've traditionally known them 3 years from now. I think they're gone. Now, I think news organizations will exist. What those are going to look like, I don't think we know. But I think we're in the equivalent of the old Wild West. I think all bets are off. I think this is the most exciting time to be teaching journalism and to be learning it, because the practice of it is not stayed or locked into something that's been happening for 50 years. It's all brand new. What you can do there is figure out how we're going to teach the next generation and how to hold on to the best practices of what makes real journalism, not balloon boy. So I'm really interested in teaching students how to do the story that Dana Priest did in the Washington Post 2 years ago, which was to go to Walter Reed Army Hospital and look at the disgrace of how American soldiers who were coming back from the war were being treated at this hospital that's supposed to be the shining gem of veteran services in the United States. And she went in and exposed that for what it was, and good for her. That's journalism. I don't think Balloon Boy is. And so I think the thing that I feel strongly about and want to do in my work is teach people how to do that type of journalism, whether it's over audio, whether it's over the internet, whether it's using video, whether it's creating text. I think you can learn the technology largely at the Learning Annex, but I think you can come to journalism school to learn the professional practice that will transcend the technology.
Where do you get your news?
Where do I get my news?
Mm-hmm.
I get it largely through the internet from traditional print sources. So when I was doing my MA work at Georgetown University in D.C., I did an 8-month experiment for a class. I'm talking about a social science experiment that was documented and had a methodology, but it required me to only get information from the internet for 8 months. And it was during the 2000 presidential campaign. And so I disconnected my cable, and I did not read a magazine or a newspaper. And this was in like the year 2000. So everybody was kind of like, ooh, can you live on the internet? And so it was kind of in that kind of zeitgeist. And I tried it. And you know what? I never went back. I as much as I love print newspapers, I have it bookmarked, and I read the New York Times, I read the Vancouver Sun now, I read the Washington Post, I read the New York Daily News, but I read them all online. And that's a different experience than reading them in your hand.
Well, you're saving trees, and people in Vancouver like that.
Oh, yeah. look, I am a Canuck.
Okay, I have a series of rapid-fire questions for you. I don't want you to think about any answers. I'm just going to fire them off. Mac or PC?
New to Mac.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Phone or email?
Phone.
Day or night?
Night.
Walk or drive?
Drive.
East Coast or West Coast?
East Coast.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Pen or pencil?
A pen.
Land or sea?
Land or sea. Land.
Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert?
Oh, Jon Stewart.
What's your favorite song?
Oh my God. This is the kind of thing that causes people to lose presidential elections when they can't answer something very simple. My favorite song. Well, the song I've been singing recently is The Ladies Who Lunch by Stephen Sondheim from the musical Company. That's what's been on my mind. I've been thinking about my mom, so that's probably what's been on my mind.
That's great. Thank you so much.
All right.
Caftans and planning a brunch on their own behalf. Off to the gym, then to a fitting, claiming their fat. Looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? I'll drink to that. Here's to the girls who stay smart. Aren't they a gas? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass. Another long, exhausting day, another $1,000. A matinee, a pinter play, perhaps a piece of mine. Play wife, aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of Life just to keep in touch. The ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools, too busy to know that they're fools. Just watch, aren't they the best? When they get depressed, it's a bottle of scotch plus a little jest. Another chance to disapprove another brilliant singer. Another reason not to move. Another vodka stinger. To that. So here's to the girls on the go. Everybody tries. Look into their eyes and you'll see what they know. Everybody dies. A toast to that invincible bunch. The dinosaurs surviving the crunch. Hear it for the ladies who lunch. Everybody rise. 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 Rise.
You're listening. listening to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today on the show, we heard an interview with Professor Joe Cutberth from the UBC Graduate School of Journalism. And Jess Micklin was our interviewer. Hello, Jess. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks again for having me.
So I know you are one of Joe's students, but I'm interested. Did you learn anything new about Joe having interviewed him?
Well, actually, the interview we just heard was my second attempt at it because my first time around, I noticed about 5 minutes in that I wasn't recording anything, and Joe just laughed it off. He said his first time in a similar situation, he wasn't recording either, so it was a little bit of a bonding moment.
Thank you again, Jess, for being on the show, and a big thank you goes out to Joe Cutberth. Of course, we always like to thank Lex Stoymanoff, our producer here on Prof Talk, and thank you to all of you for listening. Please join us again next Monday morning for another episode right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And also, if you have a moment, check out our blog at ubcproftalk.wordpress.com. From our blog, you can also link to a podcast of today's show as well as past episodes. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next Monday morning. Bye-bye.